the past.
Christmas with the family.
The present.
A song and dance.
The future.
And surviving more than the wilderness.
You are listening to COL Movies.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn. I'm gonna make him an offer again.
I love the smell of napalm in the morning.
Go ahead. Make him my day.
All right, Mr. DeMille, I'm ready for my close-up.
May the force be with you.
Rosebud. Hello, everybody, and welcome to a brand spanking new episode of COL Movies. And we've got a good show for you. And I would like to introduce my co-host because I don't have an adjective, Ray and Steve. Welcome, guys.
Hey, how's it going?
We're adjectiveless people today. Yep. That's fine.
Oh, well. But in any case, we've got a good show for you. We got Christmas Vacation, Burlesque, and Wrecked that we're talking about today. But let's first start off with a little bit of news. First off, from coming soon, we've got Blanchett, Scott McCoy, and Perbs Brandt confirmed for The Hobbit. Yes, I am proud of myself for not being able to pronounce that name. Perbs Brandt.
It's not huge amounts of news, but I figured, you know, there's going to be some people who are really interested in The Hobbit and what's going on with it and the development, which just seems to be going on forever and ever and ever and ever. So, you know, Kate Blanchett's going to reprise her role as Galadriel, you know, and, well, it's just kind of interesting to see the development of this as it kind of goes forward. So I guess it's targeted for December 2012. We've got some time here before things start to flush out. So nothing huge, just a little geek news here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw the thing about Blanchett. I mean, I'm glad that they're going to bring in some consistency. It'll be nice.
It's a good thing. And it's a nice to have some sort of connection between the movies there isn't anything else. So I like it.
Well, if anything, I'm just – my biggest geek thing here is that Sylvester McCoy is going to be in this and – anybody who knows Doctor Who knows Sylvester McCoy, so.
Yeah. It's like Dr. I mean, McCoy? Just kidding.
No, not Dr.
Damn it,
McCoy.
Jim.
Kind of Dr. McCoy, sort of, but not that way. Yes.
Bones.
So, so a question for you guys. You remember Star Blazers?
Oh, hell yeah.
I do.
I don't. But
That doesn't surprise me though.
But apparently,
yeah, that was back in Battle of the Planets days.
Okay, yeah, I kind of don't really know that. So tell us what's going on with Star Blazers here.
Okay, well, back in the day, when we, you know, we didn't have a whole lot of quote unquote anime over here, and they were bringing over shows from Japan. And they would redub them and retitle them Star Blazers, which was in Japan the Space Battleship Yamato, got a huge, 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 huge kind of following over here. And they're doing this really awesome looking live action version of it. So there's a full trailer that's been released, and I think the first 2 minutes of the movie has been released on YouTube and various other sites, and basically all the Battleship Yamato geeks are just going crazy for this. So I don't think there's any real talk yet of whether or not this is going to come out over here. It'll probably have to be imported in order to see it, but it's huge in Japan, and it's actually pretty big here. It's got a pretty big cult following. So if you have a chance, give it a look. And I highly recommend I don't even know if they're maybe available on Netflix or something.
If you can find anime?
If you can find
a lot of the anime movies, Battleship Yamato, are on Netflix streaming.
Oh, sweet. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I noticed a lot of stuff in my instant queue was expiring on December 1st, so...
Slash cry.
Yeah. So I don't know if it's coming back or what, but if you get curious, check it out. It's really cool, especially if you're at all into World War II stuff, because the ships and stuff, even though they're flying through space, are kind of actually like actual World War II battleships, sort of.
Yeah, they have that look of the carriers, like on the front of the Macross ship.
Yeah,
in Robotech, they look like those kind of carriers.
All very naval based. So, check it out.
And this reminds me a lot. We talked, several months ago now about the Gatchaman re-release.
Mm-hmm.
And this follows that same pattern. Because at the same time when Star Blazers was out in America was when Battle of the Planets was out in America, which was the Americanized version of Gatchaman.
Right.
So, you know, so it's interesting that both of those are, I guess, kind of scheduled to come out around-ish the same time.
Yeah.
Interesting that they're bringing it back, you know, like 30 years later.
Yeah, almost exactly.
Two of these. Yeah, exactly. Kind of the same time they were out 30 years ago, coming back with full feature movies. That's interesting. I wonder if that's a intention or not. So, but who knows?
You can never tell with those wacky Japanese.
You gotta love the wacky Japanese.
Oh, I love them.
Yeah. If I didn't have so much content to consume, I would totally be going back and essentially subscribing to all those. To the Super Sentai and Kamen Rider series that I've been I watch from TV Nihon.
Mm-hmm.
It's they come up with kind of the coolest things, and it's like cheesy, but it's just freaking cool, all at the same time. So, anyways, where were we? Moving on. Last but not least. The official video for the full-length D-Rez has been released, full of 1982 Tron-like goodness.
Oh, yes. I don't know if you guys got a chance to watch this yet, but this is straight-up homage to the original Tron here. Some of the effects are lifted straight out of the original movie. So it's just really, really cool. It's actually, I'm surprised. The soundtrack was released today. I didn't get to pick it up yet.
I'm disappointed in you, Fuzz.
I know.
I expected a review.
I'm recovering from the weekend still.
Oh, right.
Happy birthday, by the way.
Yeah, very much.
Thank you. But yeah, I'm guessing this is the full length trailer or video. The song is only a couple minutes long, so it's not huge. But it is entertaining to watch, has some kind of crossover between the old films and the new one. So
starts off in Flynn's arcade. That is awesome. Yes.
Oh, it's straight up. I mean, the song starts off in the full-on MIDI tones of 1982 and then just kind of goes from there. So there's a nice little crossover from the old into the new, a little kind of segue at the end. That's kind of cool. But you know, as we inch ever closer to release of Tron Legacy, which is coming up in a couple weeks here, kind of getting flooded with even more Tron stuff. So, love it or hate it, you got a couple more weeks to endure it. I, for one, love it. So.
Oh, I can't wait.
Yeah.
That might even be considered my favorite movie of the year. I keep changing my favorite movies of the year as we go along.
You're allowed.
All right. Now we have the news. Let's go back into the past.
I don't mind, but you better promise me I'll be back in time.
Gotta get back in time. Back in time we go. go back to National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation of 1989, directed by Jeremiah Chick.
Your guess is as good as mine.
And starring Chevy Chase, Beverly D'Angelo, Juliette Lewis, and a cast of thousands. No, that's not right.
And a very young Johnny Galecki.
Yeah. I find it really interesting that Juliette Lewis got top billing in this. I'm trying to remember, 1989, was she sort of established or was she kind of up and coming?
Cape Fear.
Okay.
Was it out by then?
I would have Cape to look. Fear, I thought Cape Fear was more the early 90s, I thought. But it was just interesting. This series is one of those things. The one of the funniest things I always thought about the Vacation franchise is the fact that the parents get older, but they bring in new kids every time. The kids are around the same age always, but Chevy Chase and Beverly D'Angelo are getting older in every movie.
Yeah.
So I just always thought that was kind of funny, you know. But that's just me.
Oh, I agree.
Yeah.
It's just really weird not to see Anthony Michael Hall as Russ.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they switched. They switched the daughter between the first and second one? Or were they the same? I didn't think they had the same kids in European Vacation.
I honestly, this is the first Vacation movie I've ever actually watched, so I really can't say for myself.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Honestly.
Wow.
Well, I'm also not a comedy fan, so the Vacation movies never interested me in any way, shape, or form.
Oh, not even the original?
No.
Original Wally World?
No, but yeah, also Wally when it came out, when this came out, I was like 9.
Yeah, but gotcha. It's perfect. I mean, it's other than some of the stuff being a little bit, especially in the original one, a little bit maybe risque for a 9-year-old, the level of humor really isn't.
That's far
beyond a 9-year-old. So, yeah, I remember watching it. I was pretty young when I watched it. So
how funny do you think this movie really is?
This one is weird for me. I like parts of this movie. I really like the original Vacation. Sorry, cell phone. I like the original Vacation, and I love European Vacation. European Vacation is actually probably my favorite one. This one, I have a little bit of a rough time only because I think the beginning of it is not as funny as the end of it.
Didn't you think during that first scene, didn't you think just start actually hating Chevy Chase's character? Because I thought he was just being a moronic pig.
Well, here's the thing. He's kind of he's the original. What's the name of the dude from The Office?
The Steve Carell character.
Yeah, that type of character who's like, he's going to do what he's going to do, even though everyone else knows it's stupid and they may tell him it's stupid, he's going to do it anyway. Sort of character.
Right.
And I think that's the problem is, as I got older with these movies, it got to the point where he did start to become sort of annoying to me. It was like, why doesn't somebody just smack him? He's so stupid. But, I mean, he does do things both ways. I mean, he kind of flip-flops between being the sort of lovable idiot to just an all-around sort of jerk sometimes. But I think part of Chevy's talent is being able to make that sort of humor work either way.
I agree with you. I think I liken him to – he's that dad that's incapable, mm-hmm. but yet will constantly try to show his abilities, right. But his family always knows he's not going to succeed in it.
Right.
You know, it's kind of like the dad that on Thanksgiving will watch football with everybody and try to be like, go Packers, get a you know, get a home run.
Home run.
You know, whatever. You know, but really has no clue of what's really going on.
Mm-hmm.
He's just going through the motions of doing that. Like, if he just did things how he would do it, it'd be okay. But he's going through the motions of life, you mm-hmm. know, and rather than just then truly living it, he's trying to be the ideal. And I think that that's what's funny about this movie. And that's why I laugh at it, because I'm just like, in this movie in particular, I mean, I find it funny because you know the fumbling idiocracy is coming. You know it's coming, and it's just like, at what point is it going to come? You know, and you're just kind of going, oh, God, he's on a roof. At what point is he going to fall? Oh, God, he's right. getting on a sled, and he's putting this oil on it. At what point is he going to go barreling down? You know, you know it's coming. It's just it's part of the fun is actually trying to figure out how it's going to happen. You know?
Right. That's kind of what I said. There's classic things in this movie. You know, there's things in this movie that I will always find funny. I just, for some reason, I think that this movie is sort of unbalanced. I think, to me, at least, in my opinion, the movie's a lot funnier towards the end than mm-hmm. in the beginning. The beginning is kind of like, it almost seems like they warm you up by like kind of doing the things you expect to happen. Just like you said, you know, oh, he's going to do this. What's going to happen? You know, oh my God, he's got a chance. It's a matter of time before he amputates something off, or, you know.
Whole Jason Voorhees hockey mask.
Mm-hmm. Right.
As to make a reference in as a joke. Honestly, I really felt at least that beginning and maybe more towards the end they get away from this. I just felt like it was just a series of bits, you know, and just all it was these moments through the this time. It didn't feel to me like there was a progression of a story or anything like that. And most of the time, as I was watching this, most of the time I was thinking, Clark, you're a moron, you're a pig. Like, especially that first scene. I'm like, oh, dear God. Oh, dear God, please. It's like you don't have to demonstrate your manliness when the only people around you are your family. And the guys you're trying to race are in a bigger truck than yours. Just let him pass, let him go on, and live your life. And why, oh, why did he have to go with that tree? I mean, honestly, the good dad.
Because it's a Griswold thing to do.
Right, Clark's always trying to impress, so.
And how many windows did they break through this entire movie?
I know.
A lot.
No one cares that a window broke during this entire thing. It's just when these things that break happen, it's no big deal. They don't even have a common moment. It's like there's another window we need to replace. But there you could also go to the absurdist, because like when he finally unties the tree and everything expands out and it breaks through the one window. Later on, that window is all nice and fixed. You don't even see anything about it. So it's like, yeah, whatever. It's kind of a joke, but
you can tell though, the kids know, you know, the whole family knows. Everybody just knows he's a big tool, but that's part of his charm is like you know, he's like Tim from, you know, Tool Time. It's like Al and him. Al Borland and Tim. You just know that every time Tim picks up a tool, he's going to staple his hand to something or he's going to break something.
You know what?
Al's like, you know, it's the same thing. Yeah.
Tim Allen was actually able to do that funny. Chevy Chase in this movie does not. He just comes off as a douche to me.
Okay.
Well, Chevy, again, Chevy's a very polarizing comedian, too.
Kind of that Steve Martin.
Whole,
feel.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot of middle ground with Chevy. A lot of people find him hilarious. A lot of people find him completely annoying. And, you know, some people are amused by the fact that he's able to do that.
Yeah, and people. I don't find him completely annoying. Like, that's definitely not a way I would describe him. I just really found the character as way too moronic, although he had his moments of insight that the times when you can kind of relate to him. I really liked, like, near the end when he's talking to his boss about his frustrations, instead of that previously where he was going absolutely berserk and was like, I want to tear his heart out, a moment when he actually faced him, he was a total gentleman and says, I am really upset. Here's why I'm upset. You know, there's nothing I can do about it, but since you're here, I'm going to let you know, because that's what I wanted to do. Well, previously it seemed like he wanted to kill him. So, it's these little moments and his, and the scene in the, attic, when he gets stuck in the attic.
Yeah.
I like that scene. I thought that was a very cute scene. And if you want to consider something funny, that was funny.
Sure. Yeah.
It was funny. Then it goes into this nice moment, and then all of a sudden, whoosh.
But see, I think that's the thing about Clark as a character throughout all the movies, is he is everything he does ultimately goes back to his family. Do you know? Like, he wants his family to have the best life possible. He wants his family to have a great vacation. You know, but he's this high-strung dad. You know, he's like, he wants his bonus so he can buy a pool for the house. He wants his kids to have the best decorated house for Christmas, the best Christmas tree. You know, but he's just oblivious to how.
Right. The motives are always noble.
Yeah. The motive is always noble. But then you see him break down and be human every once in a while. And I think that those kind of scenes you're talking about, Jeff, where you actually find him being a redeeming character. But when he's totally in the, I'm going to have the best Christmas for my kids ever, the kids are like, oh, God, what does that mean?
Oh, God, Dad.
No, you don't have to decorate the house with 50,000 lights. A string of 50 lights is fine. You know, like, they it's fine, Dad. You know, like, they get it. But I think that that's what it is. It's sort of like, what extreme is he going to go to? And not to mention, you know, the vacation movies, including this one, set a standard we still joke about in pop culture today. You know, like, you know, I don't know about you guys, but, you know, a lot of my friends and stuff, we always call Walmart Wally World, and that's Wally World based off the vacation movie, you know. Yeah. Or when you go down the street and you see a house that's completely covered in lights during the holidays, you think it's like, you call it like the Griswold house.
Well, you know, I always say it's a tad bit nipply out.
Yeah, right. You know, it's like, oh, time to empty the shitter. You know, like, there's certain things that, you know, like, we take these little pieces from these movies. So, I mean, as much as we love to hate him, you know, he still finds his way into our popular culture, which I think, you know.
Did you know that they're going to make a new one?
No. See, it's time to let it go. I'm okay with letting them go.
There's only one part of this story, of this sequel, that's sort of redeeming in my book. It's the fact that it's going to be a sequel, but it's going to focus now on Rusty taking his family to Wally World.
Oh,
no, they're going to Wally World before it closes, because Wally World is going to close forever. Kind of like he wants to kind of grab the glory days of his, you know, youth, he's going to grab his family and take them on a trip. So I think I like that, you know, again, it's not it's kind of repeating, but sort of, I don't know, it's sort of an update. So I've only heard rumors of it. They announced it back in earlier this year, I think, and I haven't heard anything else about it, so I don't know if it's still in development or what. But yeah, there's going to be a new one. I mean, they've even had like a TV. They had a sequel to Christmas Vacation that was made for TV that was just played. And I mean, yeah, that's kind of what my thing was. Is like, what point did the franchise sort of jump the shark? Really?
Sure.
You know?
I mean, so, I think probably because European Vacation was before this one, correct?
Yes.
So I think it probably jumped. I mean, truth be told, I think it jumped when they stayed at home. You know, I think this movie was the shark jump.
Right.
But it has its redeeming qualities.
Oh, yeah.
It's just that, you know, they kind of could. If they had left it at Christmas Vacation, that would have been fine.
Right.
You know? You know, as far, you know, going on from there, it's kind of like you start getting into themes like Christmas or, you know, or the vacation cruise or, you know, Western Vacation or, you know, and you're like,
Western Vacation.
Yeah, it's annoying. But Christmas Vacation, I mean, it is, it's its own little standalone, you know, and I think I like it, you know,
I agree.
And the one thing I did find funny though is, I did notice watching it this time. I had never picked up on these before, but I noticed a couple of like glaring continuity errors that made me chuckle, you know, cause I caught them, you know, it's like watching a movie for the 100th time. You finally catch that weird little thing. Right. But like when Rusty is carrying those reindeer, he drops them on the ground and he breaks one of them. And I noticed one of them breaks when it hits the ground and I'm like, oh, you know, but they're back. It was just a funny little moment. And then when Chevy was going down the hill, I noticed a rope clearly pulling the sled.
Yeah, that
in one
part,
scene.
That part cracks me up every time. It doesn't matter how many times I've seen this movie. That part and the squirrel.
Yeah, the squirrel.
It's the stupidest thing in the world. Why are these people so afraid of a squirrel? But it just cracks me up.
I love it. The old aunt.
Oh yeah. That's why I said when they show up, when that old couple shows up, that's like that's when the movie to me starts to get hilarious because it's like, yeah, these two are
I pledge allegiance to the flag.
Great. She died 30 years ago.
And then
you know. The trivia on her, that's the original voice of Betty Boop.
Yep.
That's awesome.
I actually knew that because they said that in the commentary.
Oh, yeah. But she's the original voice of Betty Boop.
And I could totally see it. It's like after they said that, I'm like, oh my God, that's right! I was like,
yeah, but like I said, this movie's got its classic moments. The squirrel, the cat, you know.
I'd completely forgotten about Julia Louis-Dreyfus being in this movie.
Oh, me too. When I saw her again, oh my God, yeah, she was in this movie.
For some reason,
I kept thinking that her husband was – he looks like oh God, now my brain's going to go blank. Ace Ventura.
Oh.
He reminds me of Jim Carrey from Once Bitten.
True. Yeah. I know exactly what you mean. Yeah. It's the hair. The hair flip.
It's the hair. Exactly.
The hair flip.
Yeah. So, you know, it's got its moment. It's got its charm. You know.
Exactly. Definitely. There you go.
So.
Excellent. What have we learned? This is what we learned from National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. You get a whole quarter if you rub my boil. Always check your Christmas tree for squirrels. Cats and electricities don't mix. If you want a Christmas bonus, kidnap your boss. The Star Spangled Banner is a great Christmas carol. And play ball! ball.
Play ball.
So yeah, this movie for me, as far as the franchise goes, this was kind of a snoozer and not my favorite, especially coming off European Vacation, which is my favorite. But it has its classic moments. So if you liked any of the Vacation movies and you haven't seen this one, I would recommend renting it. It's an easy rental.
I think that as a whole, once you string it all together, it's just a funny, hilarious movie. It's stupid, but funny. So definitely recommend.
I have to say that I think it's a Christmas classic. It's not my cup of tea, and to me, I don't think it's that great of a movie, but I do think that it should be on everyone's Christmas watching list. So when it comes to Christmas movies, this is one of those movies that everyone should just watch, whether they rent it to watch it or they purchase the movie or what have you. It's really something that's to get you in the Christmas spirit. It's something to watch. All right. Let's move on.
Right here, right now. There is no other place I want to be.
From ridiculous comedy to singing and dancing, we've got Burlesque, directed by Steve Antin, starring Cher, Christina Aguilera, Eric Dean, and Cam Giganet.
I don't know if it's Giganet.
I don't know
how to pronounce that.
I don't know how he says it either. But still.
But so I went to see this movie, and what did I order? Oh, well, let's talk about my experience quickly here. I come into the theater. There was two women in front of me in line. They finally open up, go into the theater. We sit down. Not a single male entered the auditorium after I had, except for the waiter, and he didn't really count. And I ordered a sangria. So I was all set.
Wonderful.
It was, yes, I admit, it's very gay.
Oh, I had pretty much pretty similar experience because, I went to see this on Friday, and this was after my my surprise guest arrived, which was my friend Chad, who now lives in Denver. So yeah, he basically showed up in my house, and I'm like, "Hey, you want to go see Burlesque with me?" So, and Jeff knows Chad. So you just imagine two big dudes walk up to the ticket counter and we're like, yeah, we need two for Burlesque. And yeah, again, we get in the theater and we are the only two guys in the whole thing. There's probably about 15 or 20 women in there with us.
And all those women know those two are gay.
here's these two big dudes in like quilted flannel and jeans, and you know, we're like watching Burlesque. So it was awesome.
My experience was a little less exciting, but I went to go see this at the Cine Bistro, so it was it's in Old Hyde Park, which is kind of, you know, the very gay area of town anyway. And now I understand, I had already talked to some people last week that had already seen the movie, and they were like, it was sold out. We couldn't get in, da 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 da, all this kind of stuff. I'm like, damn, really? Mm-hmm. And so I go and I walk right in, and it's just me and like two couples. And then all of a sudden, like these three gay couples walk in right and sit right behind me and start cackling, you know? So it was like, I was like, okie dokie, I see where this is going. So, you know, and I'm the only loser sitting by himself at this movie. That's all I can think in my brain, you know? So I just ordered my mac and cheese and popcorn chicken and like went to town.
Nice.
Like, but, screw you, mother effers, I'm gonna enjoy this movie by myself.
Exactly. Bastards. Mm. All your love. Fuck you. Sorry. Explicit.
Well, sorry. I think we've taken care of that.
but anywho, the point of the story. Overall, what did you guys think? I realized this was dragging you two completely out of your elements. Perhaps.
Oh, really?
Perhaps.
Yeah, I don't really think it's too far out of my element. I mean, this is someone, I mean, I love, like, Moulin Rouge and, you know, that kind of stuff. So it's not completely out of my element. I think I enjoyed it. I wasn't, I don't think I was ever bored watching it. There were, of course, I didn't think it was, like, breaking any new ground story-wise. I think we've, this is sort of a classic tale.
Hasn't this been told, like, 2 or 3 times?
Oh, I think it's been told probably hundreds of times. It's just, you know, it's like the Cinderella story, kind of, you know, just sort of revamped and redone. And the burlesque part of it just sort of kind of anchors it in a particular style of music. So,
I disagree.
No.
Here's my little problem with this movie. And this is like, and really, it's just a little problem, little irking. I thought they did too much modern day-ish type music. I mean, they really broke it out as, and they, instead of having that live, that sounding of live music on stage, a la Chicago, to use a recent movie, it sounded too much. There was too much of recorded music to me. And maybe you could say, well, they did have a DJ booth, so they could be playing
background
instrumental music, right?
Yeah.
Right.
But like the sound of her voice, and which I suppose is not that big of a deal considering Chicago kind of had the same type of vocal style. But it seemed too modernish to me, and because it was a burlesque, I almost wanted it to be kind of the costumes work for kind of that throwback look for like the 1920s, 1950s, no, 1920s style. Are shows that just for some reason just I really, really enjoy watching. Just it's so fascinating. And when you're talking about dancing women, I'm not always a fan of dancing women, but when they're doing stuff like they were doing on stage in that or Cabaret or Chicago, it's to me, it's just this is so neat and cool. Just because I like that older style. And I would have liked them to.
It was very Dita Fontes, very Pussycat Dolls when they first came out. You know, not so much the Pussycat Dolls, the recording artists, but Pussycat Dolls, the burlesque show that is in Los Angeles, and those kind of things where they're trying to come, they're bringing those roots back. And the dancing was really good. I mean, the girls are freaking performers.
Oh, that was amazing. And just again, back to that style of dancing that they were doing, that's the type of stuff that I really like in this type of musical, is where how they bring the music into the scene is because, well, they're performing on stage and they're singing,
right?
Which is one of the best ways to have a musical, because it makes so much sense instead of people just standing around their kitchen and singing about small talk. It's a different movie, which we'll discuss later. In regards to the kitchen small talk anyways. I love those musics and style. It's like when you think along the lines of Moulin Rouge was supposed to be this more majestic. It's supposed to be that more produced sound, and that makes sense in there to have that type of sound. But I really would have liked in burlesque to really use that band more, to not have been essentially playing them over CDs. Sure, this is supposed to take place in modern day. This isn't taking place in the 1920s. But it would have been cool, just really cool to have that that band, and it would actually feel more like a burlesque, like the classic burlesque. And I can forgive them for being a little bit more modern with the stage flashing, like the big like burlesque logo for the final number, which was a freaking amazing. I mean, I it's whenever they were doing those numbers, and just when Christina had her first time while she's on stage where she breaks out singing and just soulfully goes into the song and starts dancing, enjoying it, and just making the crowd go wild. I mean, that scene where the band started playing, that was one of my favorite scenes. Mm-hmm. Scenes in this movie.
I kind of wondered why that band was there if they were only going to play a few songs a night.
And if she's doing this as supposed to be burlesque, you would probably want to have more of that live music playing. And to me, they looked like they were doing good. So they could play. So why not do them? It's just like, if you got a singer, let her sing. If you've got a band, let them play.
Right. Well, I think the main problem is
Go ahead.
Yeah, the main problem is the fact that the person who was sort of the star before, mm-hmm. Nikki, was so unreliable. You know, she would show up late, or she wouldn't show up at all, or she would show up drunk, that, you know, she couldn't basically have this entire show based around her. She kind of had to, you know, have the other girls go out there who could dance but couldn't sing. So then they needed to play against, you know, backing vocals and backing tracks. And so I think there was a mixture of, you know, that's kind of why they were going at, like, you have this guy in the DJ booth and you've also got this live band. And it kind of helped transition more into a traditional show when she realized she had somebody who could perform reliably through mm-hmm. the entire thing. And I could base an entire show around this one performer.
She shows up on time, and that she demonstrated that while she was actually a cocktail waitress. She was excited to do this. I mean, she up and left Iowa and came down to LA just to be able to dance, to perform, to sing. And because she had so much passion in her, she was and force of will to get the job, because she wanted mm-hmm. that. She wanted it bad. Well, Nikki was like, it's a job. I mean, this is my thing. I'm a star. And just a stuck-up bitch that thinks right. she can do whatever she wants.
But she did have the best line in the movie. She did have the best line in the movie. I'm not going to get upstaged by some slut with mutant lungs. That's the best line in the movie.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I was like, that's classy.
I think my biggest problem with burlesque is the lack of burlesque in it. And obviously that's because this movie's rated PG-13. I think of burlesque, I think of kind of an overly sexual striptease sort of, you know.
There was nobody in the big champagne glass.
Right. I mean, the closest they got was the number they did with the feathers, where she was kind of naked behind them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. That was as close as they got. But, you know, there obviously is Christina Aguilera. I think she's trying to keep it sort of, you know, obviously teen friendly. You know, she's got mm-hmm. her droves of teenage-esque fans. That I think she's trying to – maybe it's a good thing. Maybe she's trying to kind of introduce them to the world of burlesque. I don't know what Christina's,
She's such a stylized singer. She goes from – her last song was the 40s. Maybe now she's mm-hmm. going to the 20s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like yeah. But she can sing like those people did. So,
right.
But I liked there was a piece of this that I was thinking too. I kind of think Tess Cher's character
mm-hmm.
was holding on to the fact that she was the only one who was going to sing in this place
mm-hmm.
because she didn't want anybody else. That was her only way to really stay on stage. She couldn't dance like the other girls
mm-hmm.
anymore. So
yeah.
She really didn't want anybody else to sing because she was the only one who sung live. And she wanted them to be able to dance like the people that they could. So I think there was an element of control that she had. But when when Christina's, you know, when Allie came along, she could kind of go, okay, I can actually turn this piece over to her, you know, so I can make the money to save the club.
You know what I would have really liked to see in that relationship was, you know, and maybe something that could have been done as kind of like the encore to the finale would have been something where, yeah, a duet with Tess and Allie.
That would have been neat.
And it would be almost like the passing of the torch. It's like, you know what? I'm just going to manage this place. You are going to be the star performer. And I want to thank you by singing with you or something like that. I don't know.
I think you're right. I think a duet would have been cool between the two of them.
I would have really liked to see Cher sing more. And show more because you know he just sings the burlesque song in the front, which was wonderful. And that was actually probably the most burlesque moment.
You know what? Yeah. I'm gonna get struck down by lightning, and I love Cher as much as the next gay man, but her on screen, she is scary looking on screen.
True.
I just kept thinking she's like 70 years old without a wrinkle, and it's a little against the laws of gravity.
Yeah, but you love her for it. Come on.
Her head is shaped like a peanut now. It's not natural. Nobody's head should curve like that. It's just it kept creeping me out every time she was on stage. And it was, you know, when we got done with the movie, you know, I was like, I consider Cher a pretty decent actress. I mean, she was awesome in Moonstruck. I loved her in Mask. You know, I know she can act when she, you know, when the chips are down, I know she can act. But I think she's done so much stuff to her face that, you know, the millions of little, you know, non-vocal cues that people use to communicate with and express themselves are completely lost on her now. And it just kind of freaks me out.
She can almost just move her eyes back and forth and her lower jaw.
Yeah.
It's a little like the a little like the Saw character.
Yeah. You know, oh my God, exactly. Somebody said that exactly this weekend that she was like the character from Saw. Exactly. Just add the red spirals on her face.
Oh God, we're all gonna go to hell. This chair. I'm going to be stuck in the Cher farewell tour for the rest of my eternal life.
All I got to say is, I thought, despite the plasticness of Cher, and this actually goes for, I actually think every single actor in this movie, except maybe for Marcus, but I thought everyone did an amazing job at their parts. Okay. I mean,
first, I have to break in something first because I don't know if this happened to you guys when you saw it. Like I said, me and Chad were the only two guys in the theater, and it was a relatively middle-aged to older crowd with us. Mm-hmm. When Eric Dane came on screen, there was an audible gasp in the theater, and the moisture level in the theater increased. I swear to God.
Blood. No,
in my
theater it was it's Quinn from Glee.
Oh, jeez,
that happened in my that's what I heard behind me.
I heard nothing, but it was also at an Alamo Draft House, so of course I'm not gonna hear anything. But yeah, oh dear God, I barely understood the story with Marcus, like exactly what the relationship that Allie and Marcus were having. And because it just kind of seemed to like that's who she ran to. And then she just kind of came back and she found out about the thing. But she didn't seem to me outraged enough. When she saw the building, I thought she would more be yelling, "What are you thinking?" Et cetera. And or something, and then it's just like he just kind of fades away after he does that. After you see her find that building and then run back to Tess to tell her what she found and give her an idea, you never see him again. Ever.
Right.
The entire thing.
So, well, I think he plays Marcus is sort of like the devil. He's the temptation. He's tempting Allie, you know, like, oh, okay, you're good, you're awesome, you sing well, you're hot. Welcome to LA. I'm going to give you all the things that
are you going to make you want and deal with here?
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, he was the proverbial devil. He was the temptation, you know. Mm-hmm. This is the quick and easy way to fame and fortune, and I'm going to introduce you to all these people and make you famous. But you're going to have to give up all your friends, and you're going to have to sell out your friends at this club in order to do it. You know,
I never felt that that there was actually a resolution to the situation between Ellie and Marcus. It's just she runs out, you never see him again. Mm-hmm. Doesn't even just show up.
Well, he knew he couldn't go back there because between Ellie, Nikki, and Tess, you know, he was going to get his ass kicked sooner or later. Mm-hmm. But what did you think about the relationship between Tess and her handler?
And Marcus? Or no, Sean.
Sean, yeah.
Stanley Tucci? Oh my God, it was the best.
Stanley Tucci was awesome in this movie.
Yeah, combination. It was. I wouldn't call her a fag hag in that combo. It's got to be that fruit fly attitude. It's just this neat little Uber friends that are, you know, so close that, you know, they never, well, once they, but next to never do anything, but, you know, they're kind of touchy-feely and concerned for each other and there for each other. So it's this neat relationship between the two. And I absolutely loved it.
That they kind of established that at the end of the movie, mm-hmm. too, because mm-hmm. it left you the whole movie wondering. Well, right. Until he picked up the bartender.
Right.
Mike. No, my name's
the
Mark.
The DJ. He picked up the DJ.
From the wedding.
Yeah.
Sean and Mark, or John and Mike, depending on what time of day you were talking to him.
That was
funny. He was highly entertaining through the movie. So
that was a
hats off.
You wanted to get some lunch. God, like, damn it, you stayed too long. Now I have to entertain you longer. Yeah. Come on. Thanks, Allie. Yeah.
No, she already left.
I know.
I just love when she showed up to his apartment, knocks on the door, Mark answers. It's like, I'm looking for Sean. Sean? Who's Oh, I've been calling him John.
Oops.
Your name's Mark? Did I call you Mike? Yeah. I love that the conversation when this is the DJ looking at me? I think he likes me. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He's just chuckling to himself like,
it's like yeah, me. Sure, he's looking at you.
Anyway, yeah.
I love the gaze in this movie. I have to say, at the end where Tess is sitting there with him and he's there and he's kind of doing his little gay dance.
Mm-hmm.
Hilarious! I love it.
Mm.
So where were we? So there was the question here, which I don't think I don't remember being brought up. Did it keep your attention?
Yeah, I was wondering that because I know for me, I really found it very visually interesting. Mm-hmm. I didn't care so much about the fact that, you know, they were in a fit like a burlesque club in the '20s and then would go out and be in like regular clothes and stuff. It was kind of weird to me because I'm so used to Chicago or other stylized movies where it's a period piece. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? It was kind of weird to see them go from one to the next. But visually it looked really neat. It was shiny. It was pretty. The dancing was really good. The time off screen, the time out of the club was very minimal, which was nice.
Mm-hmm.
Because Christina Aguilera's real hair wig was horrible. It just looked terrible on her head. But then when they would go into the club, you know, and she would get all dressed up, it would look like her. You know what I mean? but her interactions with Cam in the apartment were funny.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of those things. Like the pajama scene was really funny.
Oh my god, that's also one of my favorite scenes. This is this gradual change of everything. And it's like
mom 2 seconds. And, yeah.
Do you want a cookie?
Somebody's gonna use that line. Maybe that should be our show title. You want some cookies?
If you want a cookie, you know where they are. I mean, it kept my attention. I think to me, I mean, the movie was almost exactly 2 hours long. I think there were points where I was kind of like, you know, I get to a point where I'm kind of like, okay, you guys are focusing on the music portion of this, and then it seems like they would change gears and they're like, okay, now we're gonna focus on the story. And then we're going to go back and we're going to do this whole musical number, you know, and a lot of times in a musical, sometimes they do a musical number, but it's truncated in some way. You don't really get the full sort of 5-minute music video, you know, interlude, where this seemed to vary much more, you know, here's a little bit of story, here's, you know, 5 minutes worth of music, and then here's some story, and then here's 5 minutes worth of music. While I enjoyed all that, I think it went about 25 minutes too long. I think they could have wrapped everything up a little faster, you know? And the only reason I say that is because I sat there and, you know, I was kind of looking at my watch like, okay, what time is it? This movie started when? All right, we've got, you know, 20 more minutes. And again, I didn't not enjoy the movie, but when I get like that, it's the fact that there's a part of me that's kind of like getting bored at some point. It's like, okay, I kind of know already where this movie's going, and there's no twist or anything to keep me sort of like entertained. So I've kind of already said, okay, well, this is going to happen. Let's get the show on the road here a little bit. So
yeah.
It did keep my attention, but it was towards the end there, the last 20, 25 minutes, I was starting to check out a little bit, you know? So, but like I said, I enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm. I enjoyed it, and it kept my attention through the entire thing. And mainly because I just couldn't wait for the next musical number. For some reason, I like the musical numbers. So I didn't have any problem.
I definitely would not say it was my favorite movie of the year, but but as far as if you just want to watch something fun on a Friday night, this is a chicky flick, but it's not like a downer chick flick.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it's entertaining. Upbeat.
It would be an entertaining Friday night with the friends. You know, hell, it'd be an entertaining night with the girl boys, you know, where you're all sitting there going, where you're like, which dancer are you? I'm Coco. No, I'm Nikki. No, you know, like you could be like, you're so the Nikki of this group.
Oh,
you
that
know
is,
what I mean? Like, whatever.
It's got to be some sort of, somebody's probably already made something for Facebook or some little trivia quiz thing.
It says, yeah, right.
Says, which burlesque dancer
are you?
if you have a group of friends that sit around and watch Glee every week, go with them to see the movie. You guys will
exactly.
Yeah. Definitely something. It's definitely enjoyable. Very I would really have to say it for the male side of the equation, at least, it's a very gay movie. Mm-hmm. So go watch it, all you gays, and and all you women, go watch it too. All you men, go watch it with your women, or all you men, go watch it with
your
men.
There's lots of boobies. There's lots of boobies and butts.
Yes. Speaking of Mitch, let's go on to what we've learned. We've learned that Christina shouldn't cover Marilyn Manson. Which song of that was Marilyn Manson?
When she first started on her way to L.A., mm-hmm. you start to hear The Beautiful People by Marilyn Manson when she shows up in the city. But I believe it's Christina singing it, not Marilyn Manson. So it's this really weird sort of mashup of Marilyn Manson and Christina Aguilera, and it just didn't work for me.
If you fall off the stage, legs extended, boobs up. Cher's face is scary. You don't need a microphone to sing. Friends don't chew on each other's earlobes. And gotta show a little leg, gotta shimmy your chest. Cher wields a mean crowbar.
That's the truth.
And bus tickets to L.A. are always one way.
You're serious, right? It's a good line.
All right. So, yeah. So basically, I said, you know, if you're a Cher fan, a Christina fan, it's obvious. Go see it. You will enjoy it. And like I said, if you sit around with a group of friends and watch Glee every week or something, go see it. Just don't expect any groundbreaking or new stories. This is a classic story that we've seen hundreds of times before. So, but just go in and have fun. It's kind of a little upbeat sort of movie to see. So that's my take on it.
Agreed. I found it really enjoyable. I just kind of let go and let it take you, you know, just let go, let God. And visually, I thought it looked great. I thought it was worth seeing in the theater, unless you're going to watch it at home on some amazing theater system and sound
system. Sound.
Because especially. The sound, you know, it looked really good on the screen and it sounded really good in the theater. So, if you get a chance to see it in the theater, it's worth it. If you like this kind of movie, go see it in the theater. If not, wait till you go home and you have a really good system to be able to listen to it in, because it's worth it.
I think of this as a modern-day Bob Fosse-esque film. Very enjoyable, although overall I didn't think it was that great of a movie. It was a good movie. It was very enjoyable. So I agree. This is definitely something to go see in the theaters at least once, and definitely on a good sound system and preferably a decent TV. My sangria was wonderful. Let's move on.
Did you have an umbrella in it?
No, they didn't give any umbrellas. Okay. I did have two limes, though. Let's move on to the future.
Cause it's gonna be the future soon. I won't always be this way. When the things that make me weak and strange get engineered away. It's gonna be the future soon.
In the future, we're talking about the movie Wrecked, starring Adrian Brody, Caroline, some name I can't pronounce, De Havernas, and Ryan Robbins. This is a movie about a man, simply called Man, who wakes up in a car after an accident covered in blood and with no recollection of who he is or what he's done before. When he goes through the contents of the car wrecked, he starts to suspect that he's committed an armed robbery gone bad. So, car wreck, you come into the situation, there's no one around, well, except for dead bodies.
Right. A credit card, a gun. Yeah,
right. So...
I'm gonna get right to the chase here. I've never heard of this movie before. I don't know where this trailer was seen. I watched it and I was actually really, really, really intrigued by it until the scene where he starts listening to the radio. And then it was like, I felt like they were giving everything away. I'm like, okay, so now I know that, well, okay, I don't know for sure that he committed a robbery, but from everything in the frickin' trailer, it looked pretty much like he committed a robbery. And I'm like,
there's
going to
be some plot twist. There's going to be some twist, though. Like, he was the bank manager, and they kidnapped
took
him.
Took him hostage or something?
Or something, and then he finds all this stuff and thinks that he's one of the robbers. There's gotta be some kind of crazy twist, because they wouldn't be that dumb, I hope, and give the entire movie away.
I hope not.
Because the summary is pretty much, the summary that's on here, which was from Wikipedia, because the one on IMDb sucked. But the summary that's on here is pretty much the trailer. You know, like if you watch the trailer, you're gonna go,
well, no, I thought the trailer showed a little bit more. At least the one that I saw, about him, you know, putting his broken leg into a makeshift brace, and him crawling around the wilderness. You see this big cat roaming around, and it ends up to me is feeling like it's not just a man trying to recollect the past, but more of it's that survival. Plus a survival movie. So, but it's kind of a survival movie in two different aspects, because he's trying to survive in the wilderness, but also trying to survive this amnesia and trying to survive what he's done, by trying to remember it, because in the trailer I saw, they had flashbacks, memory backs, I should say, where we don't know if they're his actual memories are just his fragment. There was fragments from his memory. So it really was somebody else holding the gun at him instead of him pointing the gun at somebody else, you know, that type of thing, where he kind of displaced it because he's suffering from mild amnesia or what have you. And it's just kind of whooshing back and he's trying to make sense of it. So it's kind of to me is a dual survival movie in regards to that. Did it intrigue me? No. Mm-hmm. I think it would be something that would be kind of a rental type thing, where, you know, if somebody's playing it, could be interesting, but am I going to go see it in the theaters? Probably not.
Yeah. I didn't quite see by the trailer what the benefit to seeing it in the theaters would be, you know, like great sound, great visual, great whatever. It would look good on my TV, you know. And I also threw out there: does this look like it's anything new?
Kind of. It's really not. It's the story of a man. You know, it's been told many times, story of a man who's suffering from amnesia, trying to recollect what happened. But they kind of throw in this other piece of, you wake up, all this has happened, and you have no idea what's going on. And there's no one around to help you, help deduce it. In most other types of movies.
Am I a good guy?
Right.
Am I a bad guy? Am I a good guy?
And then, you know, and you could have one of those things where it's like you ended up being the bad guy, but because of your experiences while being the amnesiac, you become a good guy, that type of thing. So that could be, or there could be something else. And it kind of opens up for a mystery. So it's partially been done before, but not necessarily in this way. So, I mean, everything's been done before, but new takes.
Yeah, I think the trailer would have been better for me if they would have cut out that audio.
The
flashbacks
radio
would have been fine. Yeah, the flashbacks would have been fine. You know, because that would have been like, you know, he's getting flashes of images of stuff, but you don't really know, you know, put it together or whatnot. But right now, again, I don't see anything. Well, it almost pissed me off when they did that. And I think that was a big thing for me. It was like, oh my God, it's like, and like Steve says, there might be something in there that's a twist. Yeah, the whole could be a bank employee, could have been a cop. Who knows? You know, he's an undercover cop. But at that point, I'm just kind of like, that would be the only thing that would be left would be keep me interested in actually trying to go to see the movie, you know? So this is one that I would probably wait and let people go see. And then if they were all like, yeah, you know, go see, that's
crazy
cool.
Twist.
Then
I'd be like, okay.
Yeah. Right. But right now, no, it's the trailer kind of pissed me off. So.
So essentially our excitement.
Well, like I said, the trailer gave a lot away, so I'm not too excited right now to see it.
So did the Tron trailers, but...
I just say it.
Yeah, see, but I disagree with you there, but that's an argument for another show.
It doesn't look awful.
I'll have to agree with you on that. I say man versus nature plus man versus his past equals not a hook for me. So there is no thrill in this movie. There had to be something that really would have gotten more of a hook for me. Like they missed something to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's it for this episode of COL mm-hmm. Movies. Our coming attractions next week is Santa Claus the Movie, not The Santa Claus, starring Tim Allen. We're talking about Santa Claus the Movie with John Lithgow and Arthur. Why can't I remember his name?
Dudley Moore.
Thank you, Dudley Moore. Which, I'll preface this. This is my favorite Christmas movie ever. Ever. Also, we're going to watch The Tourist with Angelina Jolie and Johnny Depp. And in the future, we're going to be talking about True Grit with Jeff Bridges and Matthew Damon, isn't it?
Yeah, I was going to say we're obviously talking about the remake here, not the original. So.
Yes.
But that's why it's in the future. Yes. There's plenty of ways of contacting us. Comments. Let us know what you thought of these movies. Go to our website, movies.cubsoutloud.com, leave a comment in the blog, or shoot us an email at colmovies@gmail.com. We accept MP3 attachments that we could play on the show. Also, check us out on Twitter, twitter.com/colmovies, which is essentially being fed from Facebook at facebook.com/colmovies. Also, still no additional reviews on iTunes. We would like your reviews and your ratings. Please go to iTunes, search colmovies. And rate us. We'd appreciate it. So, with that, for me, for Steven, for Fuzz.
Bye. Fuzz, you got served.
Hasta la vista, baby.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
That'll do, kid.
That's the worst of my ever heard. And you stole it from a movie.
He's looking at you, kid.
End of line.
I will not be upstaged by some slut with mutant lungs.
I can't.